So depending on how you look at it, I'm either the very best person or the very worst person to be standing in front of you giving a little talk on the topic of forgiveness. And I say that because pretty much every other story and parable and teaching that we've read about so far together in the book of Matthew, there's been a lot of room for interpretation, right? There's been a lot of gray area. But that is not so with today's teaching on the topic of forgiveness. This is black and white. This is as straightforward as it gets. Anyone with eyes to see and ears to hear can tell exactly what Jesus means from this story. Jesus is saying that forgiveness is not a choice for those who follow in his way. It is a duty. And that doesn't matter if someone sins against us once, or seven times, or 490 times. Our duty as followers of Jesus' way, our duty as citizens of the kingdom of heaven, is to forgive each and every offense, no matter what. It doesn't matter whether you want to forgive them. It doesn't matter if you like the person that offended you. It doesn't matter it doesn't matter about the severity of the thing that they did to you. It doesn't matter if they want your forgiveness, but rather it is your duty to forgive them no matter what. And I say that I am either the very best person or the very worst person to be giving a talk on this topic because I am, and I don't want to brag, but I'm a bit of a virtuoso when it comes to withholding forgiveness. I'm a black belt. I have a black belt in the art of this. And so I'll share a bit of a story, a bit of an anecdote to establish my bona fides with you. So when I was growing up, my very best friend in this entire world was my next-door neighbor, a girl by the name of Erica. We went to preschool together. We grew up grade school together, high school together. Our families were friends. We sat across from each other on the bus on the way to school. We spent all summer hanging out doing the things that redneck kids do, like riding four-wheelers and going for walks in the forest. We were just really good friends, strictly platonic. In fact, my nickname for her is Stinky, and she will appreciate my sharing that with you, no doubt. But when it came time to go to our junior prom, neither of us had significant others, so we made the choice to go together. And we did it upright. We had coordinating outfits. She was wearing a creamsicle-colored dress, and I had a gold vest and tie that matched. And, you know, I got her a corsage and went to her house, and we did prom photos, as you do. But then we got to prom, and no sooner did we get there than she ditched me to go hang out and dance with this kid that she had a crush on for about a week. So she left me alone all night long to dance by myself, and if you ever have seen a teenage boy doing the Macarena by himself, you will know that it is one of the most pitiful sights in all the universe. So at the end of the night, I drove her home, I dropped her off, and I was seething. I didn't even talk to her about it. But you know what? I blew, $100 on a tux, $1,750 on a corsage, and she didn't even dance with me the whole night, and she was supposed to be my best friend. I was angry. And so, for the next 365 days, I did not speak to Erica. I literally did not utter a single syllable in her direction. Now, mind you, we were next-door neighbors. Mind you, our families were friends and did a lot of activities together. Mind you, I still rode across from her on the bus every morning to school. Mind you, I still went to her house for hours every week and hung out with her brother, but for an entire year, I did not talk to her. And wouldn't it be a beautiful, preachable moment if it was out of some deep sense of Christian conviction that after a year of this, I finally decided to forgive her? But that's not the case at all. In fact, I just got tired. I got tired of not forgiving her because it was exhausting. It actually took work. It took mental energy to not talk to her. And out of a sense of tiredness, and not out of a sense of Christian conviction, did I eventually forgive her, and we made up and continued being friends once again. I actually officiated her wedding 3 years ago, I think it is. So I am either the very best person or the very worst person, depending on how you look at it, to give a sermon on the topic of forgiveness, because I know how hard it is to forgive other people. I know sometimes how good it can feel to be self-righteous and deny people that forgiveness. But I also know that on the other side of forgiveness, it's actually better for us to pass through that. So my goal this morning is not to harangue you to forgive those around you, those who have done you wrong. But my goal this morning is rather to make the case for forgiveness, both for myself and for you, in the hopes that you too will see some benefit. And I want to make that case in two parts. First, I want to talk about what forgiveness is not, because I think that word comes with a lot of baggage in it. There's some confusion about what it actually consists of. And then I want to draw on an insight from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who is a contemporary master of the work of forgiveness, to talk about what forgiveness actually is. So let's begin with what forgiveness is not. And I have just three things to say about that. Number one, forgiveness is not a momentary event. So often when we think about forgiveness and the work of forgiveness, we just think about that 1 second in which we actually speak the words, "I forgive you." And that is included in the work of forgiveness. But forgiveness also includes that long process that gets us to the point or are actually able to authentically say the words, "I forgive you." The work of forgiveness actually begins with working through and really feeling the emotions that have been stirred up by the wrong that has been done to us. Anger, grief, a sense of betrayal. Whatever it is, you can be assured that it will not feel good. It will be a negative emotion. Because if it felt good, you would have nothing to forgive someone for. But if we do not honor those God-given emotions we have, you know, if we push past them in order to rush the healing process, or we try to tamp them down in the name of propriety, or we do that traditionally American male thing of just pretending that those emotions aren't there at all, the forgiveness that we eventually arrive at, if it can even be called forgiveness, is cheap. It's not long-lasting. It's not authentic. So the work of forgiveness begins with feeling all those emotions, walking through them, hard as it may be, and getting to the other side. And on the other side, we get to a place where those emotions no longer cloud the relationship we have with the person who offended us in the first place. And sometimes that process can take years, if not decades. So forgiveness, number one, forgiveness is not a momentary event. Number two, and this I think is an important one for us to recognize, forgiveness is not condoning the bad behavior of someone else. So a lot of times the reason that we do not give somebody forgiveness is because we think that in doing so, we are in some way justifying, diminishing, or approving of the bad things that they did to us in the first place. Right? We feel like what we're doing is saying that what they did to us was okay. So to be perfectly clear on this point, forgiving someone is not releasing them from the consequences of their actions. So if someone breaks the law and there's consequences to pay, that person gets to pay those consequences. Forgiveness is not about absolving them of the guilt. It's not about saying what they did is okay. Rather, forgiveness is saying that thing that you did to me, that wrong, that injustice that you perpetrated against me, it's not going to have any more power over me. It's not going to lay claim to any part of my life. I'm not going to give it my energy, I'm not going to give it my attention. I'm not going to give it any more emotion. And I think this is probably one of the most counterintuitive parts of forgiveness, is that forgiveness, at the end of the day, it's not for the person who's getting it, but forgiveness is for the person who's giving it. It releases us. It frees us in a certain sense. So that's number two. Forgiveness is not condoning someone else's bad behavior. And number three, and I think this is another really good, important thing for us to keep in mind, and that is that forgiveness is not reconciliation. Forgiveness is not reconciliation. So our grade school understanding of forgiveness is that it means to kiss and make up with somebody. That it means that we're going to jump right back into being in a relationship with that person. But that act of restoring that relationship, being back in relationship with somebody, that's not forgiveness. That goes by another name, and that's called reconciliation. And reconciliation involves two people. It's a two-way street. Two people that need to be committed to the work of healing the relationship that has been broken by this wrong, by this hurt, by this injustice. And it takes time, and it takes continued contact with the person. But forgiveness, on the other hand, forgiveness is a one-handed verb. It's something you can do entirely on your own. So you can forgive someone without regard to whether or not they want to receive your forgiveness. You can forgive someone without regard to whether or not you're still talking with that person. You can forgive someone from a long distance away. And you can forgive someone even if they're dead. Even if they've passed on. You're still able to forgive that person, although you can't reconcile with them. So in a country where one in four women and one in seven men is in a physically violent, abusive relationship, this is such an important takeaway about Jesus' teaching on forgiveness. Because he demands that we forgive one another, not necessarily reconcile with one another. So I do not want you to hear in these words a call to remain in an abusive relationship and keep on forgiving and forgiving and forgiving. That is not what is being called. That's not what's being asked of you. Rather, what's being asked of you, is to move through and past the damage that that relationship has wrought in your life and not let it cloud your emotional life and your attention and your spiritual life. Move through it and past it. And you can do that from a distance. So forgiveness, number three, is not reconciliation. They're two different things. So forgiveness is not momentary. It's not a momentary event. It's not condoning the bad behavior of others. And it's not reconciliation. Those are two different things. So what is forgiveness actually then? I want to share this quote with you from Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He was made the chairman of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa in 1995 by Nelson Mandela, and it was an effort to heal the wounds caused by their system of apartheid segregation. And he's a guy who has thought deeply about what it means to forgive. And this week, as I was working my way through some of his writings, I read this quote, and it was a revelatory moment for me, the hard-hearted Irish non-forgiver person that I am, so I wanted to share it with you in the hopes that it would be equally as revelatory. He writes this. He says, "Without forgiveness, we remain tethered to the person who harmed us. We are bound with chains of bitterness, tied together, trapped. Until we can forgive the person who harmed us, that person will hold the keys to our happiness. That person will be our jailer. When we forgive, we take back control of our own fate and our own feelings. We become our own liberators. We don't forgive to help the other person. We don't forgive for others. We forgive for ourselves. So forgiveness is not momentary. It's not condoning bad behavior. It is not reconciliation. But forgiveness is breaking the chain of some past hurt or injustice that binds us to another person and hinders our freedom. I'm going to say again because it's the main point of what I'm trying to get across today. So forgiveness is breaking the chain of some past hurt or injustice that binds us to another person and hinders our freedom. So after we do the hard work, the long process of forgiveness, after we break the chain that binds us to some other person because of some past harm that they did to us, we are free. We are entirely free. We are free to go in and re-engage in that relationship if we want to. But we're also free to go off in a completely new and different direction. And more importantly, we are free to be the people that God created us to be, without the cloud and the specter of this past hurt clouding our judgment and soaking up our time, our energy, and our concentration. In other words, we are free to be the vessels of love and mercy that God created us in God's own image to be. And that freedom, says Jesus in today's reading, that is not our choice, but rather that freedom is our duty. Thanks be to God for that.